Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 93, Data Center Migrations, How Do You Go About It? Here we go. Today, my guest is John Nicholson. How you doing, John?
Hey, I'm doing great.
So, John, I used the term voluntold. You were voluntold to be on the podcast. I think that's awesome. Our guy, Joe, in Texas, got chatting with you at an event. He passed your test. Here you are. So, John, give us a quick overview, introduction of what you do, and introduce yourself to everyone.
I'd say my name is John Nicholson. I work for Synchronet out of Houston, Texas. We do consulting and virtualization, storage, and data center operations. I was going to say I've been doing this for a couple of years now. I'll say longtime fan of Veeam.
Cool. Good to hear that. And you know, the podcast is, it's more about our guests than it is about Veeam. We try to differentiate a little bit as a vendor podcast here. And it's really about the community. Now, the VMware community is a great, community in a sense. And, John, you're a VExpert. You're a blogger. You write the Nicholson.com blog, which is the virtual rambling blogs. I'll put that in the podcast notes. John's also on Twitter at @lost_signal, and you can follow him there. So, John, let's jump into it. I wanted to talk about data center migrations. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I've done this a few times, but it was honestly before the virtual era. I used a little bit of virtualization, but honestly, it was a lot harder back in the day. So, you know, you've gone through a number of data center migrations, I take it. Is that right?
Yes, quite a few. Just the nature of the consulting world. And you're right, it's changed a lot with virtualization.
Sure. So my number one, I wrote down three notes here. That's how scripted and prepared I am, by the way. I've got three little one-liners here that are kind of questions that will really start our discussion. I guess the first one's kind of a, you know, true or false. Is it going to be expensive?
I was going to say it's going to cost some money, that's for sure. But depending on how you do it, you can definitely reduce the cost a lot using virtualization, especially, you know, just from the logistics side, moving hardware, as well as also from the, I guess I'm not giving a true or false. I'll say it's still expensive.
Yeah,
it's
sure,
a large
sure.
data center. So.
It's a trick question. I know that. And it's one of those things that I think, right, they're, everyone's needs, everyone's situation, everyone's migration profile is different. It's kind of hard to keep that in the boundaries of what we're going to talk about today. But I think there's also, well, let me ask you this way. What do you see more of? Do you see more of data center consolidation or true migration going from this old one or from two or three old ones to one mega one that's the new one and totally different? What do you see more of, consolidation or true migration?
I'd say it's about half and half. Although I will say, you know, a lot of where the migration is just a pure migration is people are kind of moving on up in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they're currently in a data slum, as I like to call it. You know, if you're in one of those tier zero data centers, you know, maybe you have carpet. Not really a data center. It was a space that had servers that kind of got out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Or people are in a telco data center that wasn't really designed for, you know, dense power or, you know, maybe, you know, power's not even redundant. And I see a lot of people, you know, they get an outage or two, and because they've consolidated their server workload down with virtualization, you know, they've gone 10 to 1, 20 to 1, 30 to 1, you know, on their rack space usage. Part of it, they may not even need the space anymore. And so they're looking to either reclaim space within their office complex, or they just don't want to pay for all the space. So now that they've got a denser platform, they can get a much nicer, they can move to one of those tier 3, tier 4 data centers. You know, they're eyeing the better real estate now that they've lowered their footprint.
Sure, and you know that all totally makes sense because it's a weird thing. It all totally makes sense to me because it's a lot like buying a house. You have to look through the lipstick and makeup and, you know, take a look at the bones. And the bones of a data center really can deliver the power and the cooling. Those are honestly the hard things to fix, right? The rack over here, the rack over there, that's pretty easy to fix. Carpet probably is an easy thing to fix, but a proper facility with all of that supporting infrastructure of a facility, much less the available space requirement, and then also, dare I say, some just basic operations like It's not a good idea to have a window in a data center, for example, right? Little things like that can kind of become a priority, and it's one of those things that maybe we need to correct that with a proper migration. So I have a funny story to tell you. Back in the day, I used to consult of sorts to a wide range of clients in the supply chain field. And I went into this data center. Literally, it was probably 20 tiles wide by, I don't know, but no, I'd say it's 50 tiles wide by 150 tiles long. There is literally two racks, one telco, one server rack. That was it in the entire room. So probably not the best use of space, would you agree?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
Do you see any of that today, or maybe just a bunch of empty racks or racks of powered-off equipment? I mean, what do you see sometimes in some of the egregious?
Especially in the telco data centers, I really see that, because these guys used to have these massive analog phone switches that took up all the space.
Yeah.
And they've been able to consolidate that down to, you know, you can have a single, you know, one U device that replaces an entire row of phone switching hardware. Or, you know, take the storage space. You know, now that people are looking to, you know, hybrid flash storage or these designs where they used to have, you know, 1,000 disks just to achieve a particular performance metric. All the trends are going towards, you know, denser, less requirements on not just space but power.
Mm-hmm.
So especially here in Texas where real estate's cheap, it's kind of interesting seeing that, you know, a lot of these data centers, they built out extra space because the space wasn't really the cost of the build out, it was the power, the cooling. And now you wander through, especially some of these data centers from the 90s, there's just, you know, empty cabinets, or maybe the cabinets will have, you know, where there used to be a full cabinet, now they've consolidated down to three servers and a SAN, and that's really it.
I've seen a couple of places do some interesting things, like literally cut in and put some wall through the middle of the data center, and then on the other side put in cubes and offices and stuff, lay down carpet on raised floor. I'm not making this up. Have you seen that kind of stuff too?
Well, it's kind of a new trend with the as part of disaster recovery and business continuity, is not just having a place for your data to go, but also a place for your people to work. I was going to say, some of the data centers here in Texas that are focused on, you know, being off of the Gulf Coast, being far enough north of Houston to avoid, you know, the brunt of a hurricane strike, they're also discovering they can charge, you know, a decent amount of money for some dedicated office space. So that way you can, your workers can actually have a place to work. That's one thing we discovered during Ike was, you know, when you lose power across the entire city for, you know, parts of it for as long as a week or two even, you have to have a place for people to work.
Sure.
So, or even some of the larger data centers where they'll have customers who they have enough servers there, they spend so much time, they just want an office. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Do you see that, you know, part of that decision process also, especially in the migration, not so much the DR setup, because, you know, in the DR setup, there needs to be a running or runnable inventory of everything on each end. But in the migrate scenario or consolidate scenario, do you see people struggling with the choice of, should I invest in a full new, like, storage and networking infrastructure over there, or should I pick up what I've had for years and bring it over, a.k.a. possibly bring over bottlenecks, limitations, and prior bad practices? Do you see anything around that type of categories?
Oh, definitely, definitely. In fact, with a lot of the environments, it's let's build out a new environment. And then a lot of times people will tie it to DR, as they'll say, okay, we're going to use the old data center as maybe our DR site. So we're going to build up the new site and migrate the virtual machines over.
Gotcha.
And that way, and part of it's also just the risk of transport. Anytime you move, especially back with the physical realm, everyone's got that 8-year-old server that no one wants to make eye contact with. You know, maybe it's got some warning lights and no one's quite sure what it is, and it's a black box, you know, it's an appliance. Remember those, you know, physical appliance?
Yep.
And, you know, a huge part of the run-up to these is also, you know, getting everything virtual. I'll go into, you know, a site and we'll just sit there in P2V for weeks and just pile blades to the sky. So people start being scared the piles are going to fall over and, you know, crush the floor or something. But it's, that's always a, you know, that's part of the kind of the trend is I see people do the P2Vs, get everything virtual, and then at least once it's virtual, it's a smaller stack to pick up.
Sure.
you know, instead of picking up 20 servers, you're carrying one, or what you say, sometimes build out a fresh infrastructure, start fresh and test it, and then do, you know, use, you know, MIDI even Veeam or SRM or something to fail it over or migrate those VMs over.
So that's actually...
You've got an undo button, and you can go back to your old copy.
Absolutely. You always want to have that back out type of plan, because, dare I say, it might not go as expected, or there might be some acceptance testing or something like that. So do you find yourself using, you know, what, you know, you named a few tools, that's fine, but do you find yourself using, you know, virtualization-specific tools, or are you doing more like storage replication, or is it a little bit of both, depending on the data profile involved?
I mean, pretty much the classic limit of where we have to go to storage replication was, do you have volumes that are over 2 terabytes and you're into RDM territory or direct ones?
Sure.
I find myself with even some of our larger customers, you know, if most people are able to keep the volumes down to where they're stored in VMDKs, and at that point we're doing virtualization. You know, it's either you know, power off, VM migrate, or, like I said, VM, you know, use the replication function for the VM migrate. And like you mentioned, proving, that's another issue. A lot of times these data centers, it'll come up and the network team will say, hey, the circuit's good. Mm-hmm. And the second you try to put any load on that circuit. So that's kind of where, rather than to do the all or nothing, like you say, spin up a fresh infrastructure, it's not just about spinning up to protect you from the old. It's partly spin up a new one to verify that that site is actually going to hold. Because there's a lot of cases where we'll have customers, they'll spin up a couple of test VMs, and then they'll realize the routing for the other site's wrong or something. I don't know, I'm blaming the network guys here. But
yeah, no, definitely understood, because that's my next question. Do you find yourself working with a network team to recreate subnets or create new ones? Dare I say it's probably cleaner to recreate a new one, even with all the new networking technologies, but it's a heck of a lot more work, especially to the virtual machines involved, with or without tools that help address it. I mean, what's your take on that?
No, and that's always a classic battle. Do you stretch layer two? You know, do you bring your existing subnets there? I'm a huge fan of setting up a new subnet. You know, that way you can test it separately. Mm-hmm. And do that. I know you can do O2V and all kinds of exotic ways to stretch layer two across two sites. You know, that's almost a religious war, I feel like, between members of my network team here. But, it's something where, and that's one thing I actually like with Veeam is on the replicate, you can have it change the IP addresses, so when stuff comes up over there.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know about that, but basically our replica engine will change IP addresses based on a pattern, not necessarily just A to B.
Yeah, you just line up the slash 24s right up against each other, and the last octet will stay the same.
Yeah.
That way you're not having to manually script all of these IP changes, which is the classic DR problem when you're trying to fail over. And that's why people went through all these exotic means really to stretch layer two, is there was no easy way to bulk change IP addresses.
Do you find yourself also in some of the migration scenarios dealing with increased levels of difference? So let me give you an example. Maybe this old data center, and I've convinced the client we're going to go to this new data center that's their priority. It fits with their larger initiatives. This old one's vSphere 4.1. This new one's vSphere 5.1. They've got iSCSI old storage here, and they've got new FCOE over here. You know, do you have situations where they're very dissimilar in spite of the initiative to migrate? Do you have that come up?
Oh, completely. A lot of times, you know, this is done at the same time as the hardware in the old data center, especially if it's kind of a one-way push. Mm-hmm. The hardware in the old data center, you know, maybe it's an old EMC CX 3 or 4 that's, you know, barely in support. You know, maybe there's some 2950s, you know, that are about to die.
Yep.
Oftentimes it's, especially here, you know, there was kind of a downturn there for a while. Especially here in Houston with the oil industry, where no one bought any hardware for 3 to 5 years. And then all of a sudden, you know, things started to kind of turn around, and there was all this hardware that was about to go out of support, and a lot of people timed data center initiatives at the same time they were refreshing. So a lot of times even the old hardware won't even support the new versions of VMware. So you're right, you know, we'll have different versions of VMware, completely dissimilar. You know, we'll have iSCSI on the old, we'll have Fibre Channel in the new.
That becomes a really a staff issue is where I'm going at it, right? To troubleshoot. And that's where, like, you know, what you guys do, hopefully, especially on the newer end, you know, you guys have been involved in the setup and of that, so like you can help that transition. But you know, for your clients, it's probably a big troubleshoot, because they really have to troubleshoot on both ends potentially with that type of thing. It might be more comfortable on the older side, yet a little bit more challenging on the newer side. Is that a fair guess?
No, it's true, and I see some people, they'll try to keep particularly the storage vendor the same, mm-hmm. Or they'll try to keep the switching or the storage technology the same, and oftentimes, you know, they may you know, hamstring themselves by having, you know, there's a better product out there, as always is in IT, there's always something shinier,
yeah.
But if they gotta make that choice, do we go with the newer, different product? And that's something where, like you say, the consultants, you know, we commit, you know, the you know professional service groups, you know,
sure.
We come in and we build those new environments for the customer, and we proof that and we work with them to make sure that we can do that migration, as well as part of that is the knowledge transfer, because a lot of these shops, especially during the downturn, they kind of shrunk their infrastructure staff,
mm-hmm.
And now that they're building out this massive new data center, they're not necessarily staffing for it, or the skills required have changed.
Well, and that's definitely a big point, right? Because, dare I say, clouds have infrastructure too, and they still have pieces and parts. And, you know, the administrative interface for especially things like storage, one thing I've seen is that the interface for many storage products, or I should say storage brands, right? There's like, I'd say there's six household names of storage, right? IBM, HP, Dell, Hitachi, NetApp, and EMC, for example, right? With the exception of NetApp, every one of their product families' administrative interfaces are different within the products within those families. So NetApp does a little bit of a good job of keeping it pretty similar. But it's one of those things that, yeah, just because you use, say, HP storage, but now you're using this one and you used to use that one, doesn't mean they're going to look and feel the same. Good example, say, 3PAR and Left Hand. They're totally different. You know, for the people who have to, you know, do that ongoing support, it is a big deal. So investing in that training ahead of time is always a good idea. So, John, I want to kind of wrap up the podcast here. I keep it pretty short and sweet. And I guess what I'd like to do at this point is ask you just kind of some blanket recommendations, simple, practical things, that maybe people can keep in mind when they go about their data center migrations. What advice would you offer to people to make data center migrations or consolidations go well, generally speaking?
I was going to say, first recommendation, get everything virtual you can.
Mm-hmm.
Get everything virtual, get everything updated. Anything that's going to be physical, make sure you have full reinstall instructions and you actually understand the application before you move it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, two, you know, test. Make sure that new network, that new storage, run benchmarks on it, you know, flood the WAN, make sure that that new data center is actually ready to go live. And third, power. It's the thing that everyone ignores, and even as we've shrunk footprints, you don't want to move all that gear over there and realize that you don't have the breakers to support it and have to roll back an entire migration. So.
Oh, those are excellent points, and I have a funny joke to tell you about power. So I mentioned earlier that I used to work in the supply chain field, which was basically distribution centers, you know, very large million square feet type buildings that had conveyor systems and all that. And our client had bought a rebuilt system inside of the building, right? These million square foot buildings are very expensive. So we actually put a new conveyor system inside of it. And for a while, both systems were going to be in use, okay, the old system and the new conveyor system. And we said, you're going to need this 480-volt, three-phase, megawatt thing. I don't know. I'm not an electrical guy, but our electrical engineer and our controls engineer had made that request to the project team. And the facility, the customer is like, you'll never need that. So as I saw the project stopped for 2 weeks and half of the floor removed to put in this line, definitely power needs to be right before you go down that journey. Now, do you yourself, John, help calculate power, or do you have like someone that knows power do that for you? Because honestly, I don't yet. I know servers and storage and to a bit networking, but I'd have a real trouble putting my, you know, name on the line for the power spec.
I was going to say, we actually, since we're a partner with most of the major vendors, we have access to the secret you know, vendor power calculation tools. You know, I can sit there with a Cisco, you know, switch or an HDSN and tell you exactly how many watts adding that extra shelf or that drive is gonna add up.
That's awesome.
As well as at a macro scale, like if you want to design your own data center, we've got an engineering company in town that we partner with for that kind of stuff.
Awesome. So. Awesome. It pays to have the right help, clearly, is what it looks like. Well, hey, John, I really appreciate you being on the podcast today. We keep it short and sweet, and hopefully everybody picks up some practical tips around data center migrations here today. Now, just a reminder to everyone, John is on Twitter at @lost_signal, and you can find his blog at thenicholson.com. I'll put both of those in the podcast notes. And with that, John, I'd like to thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.